When hospitals have almost no room due to COVID cases, why can't more people wear masks? As a concerned student, I ask you, will you step up and take action?
With COVID-19 hospitalizations on the rise in Texas and Florida, people are asking for their elected officials to step up.
And at the end of the day, he will say, I believe, let justice be done though the heavens may fall. Whatever the heavens will bring. But right is right and wrong is wrong. And I believe we'll win.
And we'll hear from former Texas Congressman Craig Washington. From Pacifica Radio, this is COVID, Race, and Democracy, a collective effort by producers from Pacifica stations and radio affiliates. I'm your host, Akua Holt. Texas Democrats spent over a month and a few weeks in Washington, D.C. to find support in blocking the Republican elections bill that will restrict voting rights for African Americans, other people of color, seniors, and poor white communities for decades. Three of their fellow lawmakers, Houston's Garnett Coleman, Amanda Wall, and Anna Hernandez, returned to Texas on August 19th and provided the Republicans an opportunity to restart the legislative process to approve a voting bill based on so-called election integrity. According to the Texas Tribune, many Democrats are incensed, seeing the latest Republican voting bill as another moment of crises in a state they believe has long marginalized people like them in the halls of power. Attorney Craig Washington has served in the Texas State House of Representatives, the State Texas Senate, and the U.S. House representing the 18th District of Houston, formerly held by the late Barbara Jordan and Mickey Leland, presently held by Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee. Here's former interim general manager of KPFT Houston and guest host of COVID Race and Democracy, Dr. Obidike Kamau.
Brother Craig, I want you to talk to us about a suit that you've recently filed on behalf of the Democratic state representatives from Texas who left the state and went to D.C. to lobby Congress.
Thank you for having me. I was called by one of the representatives who was delegated the responsibility of contacting me. We talked on the phone. I have been keeping up with the issue from the sidelines, but had no legal interest in getting involved. I undertook some research of the Texas Constitution, the U.S. Constitution, and the rules of the House of Representatives, and I came to the conclusion that what the governor and the speaker were attempting to do to them was wrong, and so I drafted and filed a lawsuit. I filed it in United States District Court here in Austin, Texas. It's called a complaint. The former name is a complaint. In order to get immediate relief, you have to show, one, that there's a necessity, exigent circumstances is a legal word, but the necessity that if the court doesn't act stop them, then harm will be done. You have to show harm, and you have to show that there's no adequate remedy at law. I hate to use legal terms, but that means that no matter what happens, they can't unring the bell. I filed the lawsuit on Friday. It was the 6th. It was the 6th of August. And in the meantime, I found out later they were talking with some other lawyers in Austin who had a different strategy. They wanted to file in state court. I believe then and now that's the wrong thing to do, because the highest court in the state is the Supreme Court of Texas, and there are 9 Republicans on there. Not necessarily a partisan issue, but it turned out to be because the vote was 9-0 to dissolve the injunction that they were able to get on Monday. They filed on Monday. They got an immediate hearing. They got an order making everyone stand still until things could be sorted out. Meanwhile, my suit is sitting there purring from the Friday, and I was told to cease and desist. They were going to go with the state court case, and they didn't want me to do anything else at the moment, and I, of course, obeyed that. They're the clients, notwithstanding my having a different point of view. So I texted them back and said that I would stand still, of course, and wait further instructions from them. I have never gotten any more instructions from them. They lost that lawsuit. and the unanimity that they had in Washington, D.C., up there lobbying members of Congress to get enough votes to pass the John Lewis Act, started to crumble. And one by one, members started to come back. When they came back, the governor had threatened to corral them. I don't understand how you corral human beings. Last time I checked, only domestic animals are allowed to be corralled. But anyway, that shows something about his temperament and his understanding of the Constitution, even though he pretends to be a lawyer. Anyway, so I'm standing still. I'm waiting on further instructions from them. If they want me to do any more work, I will. I will file I have affidavits from all of them indicating the hardships that they've suffered. Some of them have had anxiety attacks. They miss their children, of course. Their children are starting school. One of them had an anniversary that they couldn't attend. There are a lot of things that ordinary human beings, which they are, suffer when you can't be at liberty. So they're basically caged up, not literally but figuratively, in Washington, D.C. Meanwhile, they're trying to lobby Congress to get enough votes. So that lawsuit is still pending over Dickey, and I'm still waiting on them to tell me what, if anything, they want me to do.
Well, I'm certainly hoping that they call you back, because I think it would be very interesting. But let me ask you a question. Because for the most part, they have come back, would proceeding with the suit you filed prevent this from happening in future situations, since is it still even relevant in this case?
Yes, it's relevant now, and it will be in the future, because it's going to set the marker for future conduct. It's relevant because the House, to answer your question, Obadiki, they have to have a quorum each day that they intend to do any business. If they don't have a quorum, the committee to which the bill is referred can't meet. If they don't have a quorum, then the committee can't take public testimony, and the law requires them to take some testimony, even if it's one witness and they cut the other witnesses off. They can shorten it as much as they want to, but each step of the process, if you will, when they step up the steps, they have to have a quorum each day, or the House can't meet, they can't do any business. So there are lots of opportunities for these people to gather some strength, to hear from their constituents at how mad they are about them having done what they did already going back. So there are lots of opportunities. In the meantime, if they give me a call or some other lawyer a call and file affidavits showing the hardship, because they have a right to be in Washington lobbying members of Congress just like any other citizen, they're no better, no worse than any other citizen, then the judge will take up the temporary restraining order, which restrains them from, quote, arresting them. They can't put them in jail. They can't keep them overnight. They can put a DPS guard outside of where they live or something like that. But again, we're on shaky ground here. We're talking about Fourth Amendment to the United States Constitution. We're talking about civil suits against people who touch other people without the authority to do so, without what is called probable cause. We all know what probable cause means. That means it's more likely than not that you committed a crime. None of them committed a crime. These are civil arrest warrants, and there are lots of opportunities to overcome what they're trying to do.
That is retired Congressman Craig Washington. He's a retired congressman, but I don't know that he's a retired attorney. He is still, and he is still in the fight. And I do hope, because it's a question that needs to be officially answered, I do hope that your clients decide to resume their suit. Let me ask you this, just kind of as a question to see what could happen. I know that the clients, the Representative Desitel and the people who were with him, have standing in this case. Are there other people who don't have active standing? Does it have to be somebody from those 52 who left and went to Washington? Can concern people who rights will potentially be infringed upon because of the threats their representatives took. Can we proceed with that case?
Unfortunately, no. The individual citizens do not have standing because they're not the ones being threatened. The ones that are being threatened are the House members. So in order to to wrap yourself around the Constitution, you have to show that you are in danger of harm or being arrested without probable cause. And the only ones who are being threatened with arrest are the House members because they're trying to force them back. Every Civil Rights Act we've passed since 1870, 1871, the Civil Rights Act of 1964, the Act of 1965, and the 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution make it clear that you cannot threaten a person to prevent them from exercising a constitutional right. And so we as individuals don't have standing, but we do have standing to let every one of them know that they're going to get a primary opponent and they're not going to be reelected. If they're not there to do our business, then whose business are they there to do? If they don't have the courage to stand up, one man with courage is a majority. One woman with courage is a majority. If they don't have the strength or the wherewithal or the visceral fortitude to do their jobs, they need to come on home. They don't need to be in Austin purporting to represent us because they're not.
Okay. Now, let me ask you something else. As a former representative of the people on both state and federal level, what are your thoughts on the actions of the state, the Democratic state reps from Texas that left the Capitol to prevent a quorum and for some time to prevent the vote on these, debilitating bills?
I think their conduct is shameful. I don't know why they want to hold those offices except to take selfies and pictures and things like that and appear on television. If they're not there to do the job of the people, they ought to step down or not run again. But they're going to get opponents anyway. They're going to pay for this. The ones who went back under the cover of darkness against the will of the people, knowing what's at stake. There are two steps. One is they have a bill that will take away the right. They're cutting back on the number of polling places. They're not allowing ministers and other people to gather and ride to the polls together. They're cutting back on the hours. They're putting in voter identification cards. They have a provision in there, or they're trying to put one in there, so that if you stand in line 6 hours waiting to vote because the lines are long and the polling places have been cut down, no one can bring you a bottle of water. No one can bring you a bottle of water. And they're putting in partisan poll watchers at the polls to try to intimidate people. So that's like me standing outside back in the 1800s when my blood got the right to vote. And I'm walking down from where I live picking cotton. And I get to the gate and Massa tell me that, boy, if you go vote, don't come back here. I'm going to put you and your family out. That's intimidation. The very acts that give us the right prevent people intimidate us from using the right. It's an oxymoron. You're going to give a right and you're going to threaten to take it away, and it's not illegal. It is illegal. They ought to be ashamed of themselves, but I doubt that they are because they don't understand why they're there to begin with.
One other question real quick. I understand that State Rep. Desitel is the one who approached you. Can any of those 52 who did not approach you get this case to go forward, or does it have to be the original initiators of the contact and hiring of you?
No, that's an excellent question. I can amend the suit. You can amend the suit in federal court one time without getting permission of the court before an answer is filed. They haven't filed an answer. So if 7 or 8 of them, or just one of them, came forward and said, I would like for you to represent me, I can amend the petition, take the names of everyone else out, and sue on behalf of that one person. It doesn't take any, there's no magic number to how many need to be in. One state representative who's hired me, I can amend the petition, I can file a request for a temporary restraining order and temporary injunction. The judge will give me a hearing on it. He'll hear evidence from both sides and make a ruling. That's an excellent question. I hadn't thought about that. But yes, I'd be happy to amend it. I'd be happy to disengage myself with those who don't have the will to fight and for whatever reason are playing games and represent any one of them who is being harmed, who has no adequate remedy at law, and who is threatened with being arrested and corralled, as Governor Abbott has said. That one state representative has standing already in the lawsuit. I'd be happy to amend and go forward with that one. We'll get a hearing and the judge will make a decision on the Constitution. And I'm certain that I'm correct on the Constitution. And the judge will, at the end of the hearing, regardless of all the other things that are being said, say, let justice be done, though the heavens may fall. Like the first lawsuit, when it started the end of slavery, when the man slave slipped out of Westminster Hall and was taken in by some abolitionists in England. And they brought ships over from America to argue, oh, this is wrong, and the colonies are going to be upset, and it's going to upset trade and all of that stuff. He listened to all the evidence, and he knew in his heart that human beings should not enslave other human beings, just like human beings should not tread upon the constitutional rights of other human beings. And at the end of the day, he will say, I believe, let justice be done, though the heavens may fall. Whatever the heavens will bring, will bring. But right is right, and wrong is wrong. And I believe we'll win.
All right, then. We've once again been speaking with retired Congressman Craig Washington, who has filed a suit on the behalf of the state reps from Texas who left the state to prevent the state representative to the House from having a quorum. I really appreciate your taking the time to break it down and letting us know what is involved with this situation.
Thank you.
Dr. Obidike Kamau of Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston, in conversation with Attorney Craig Washington. Democrats state Republicans are now fully enabled and empowered to enact virtually all of Governor Greg Abbott's directives, including many dangerous pieces of legislation that will fundamentally hurt the lives of Texans, including millions that will be deeply harmed by the policy.
No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation. In the capital of this nation, 200 years of exploitation, give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue. They couldn't believe it when I said yes. And then I said, you ain't heard nothing yet. We are based in Washington, D.C., a truly diverse community. Almost 600,000 strong have been exploited much too long. Inadequate power over our own affairs and national issues for which we care. No votes in Congress, the Senate, the House, no state delegation, no representation. We pledge allegiance, my country, 'tis of thee. Fighting wars, pay taxes in this country. Provide working services for the government. We get no vote, but our money is spent well. You may wonder, how in the world can this be? I thought we lived in a democracy where the U.S. Constitution gives equal protection. Check the 14th Amendment to make this connection.
No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation.
Oh well.
No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
That was Give the People the Right to Vote by Sweet Honey in the Rock. Next, with hospital capacity concerns worsening, the Delta variant has Texas on edge and in one of its worst fights since the beginning of the coronavirus pandemic. KPFT's Houston Indie Media Show has the following report on the raging COVID-19 crises.
As the COVID-19 pandemic rages on, Texas, the second hardest hit state in the country, is fighting not only the virus, but a governor that many feel is more focused on politics than its people.
Today, we will take an in-depth look at COVID, race, and democracy in the state of Texas. Texas, also known as the Lone Star State, is one of the largest states land-wise in the U.S. The state capital is located in Austin, with the most populated city being Houston. Other populated areas include Dallas-Fort Worth, San Antonio, and El Paso. On August 12th, the Austin American Statesman reported that driven by the highly transmissible Delta variant of the coronavirus and fueled by a significant unvaccinated population, the spike in COVID-19 cases has squeezed the number of available hospital beds in Texas to a pandemic low of 7,187, in yet another troubling sign of a strained hospital infrastructure. According to the state data, only about 439 total beds are available for an 11-county region made up of 2.3 million people across Travis, Williamson, Hays, Bastrop, Blanco, Burnett, Caldwell, Fayette, Lee, Llano, and San Saba counties. The region had only 7 staffed intensive care unit beds available last Friday, up from just 2 on last Tuesday. At the same time, the state health department reports but there are only 44 regular ICU beds available for the Houston Trauma Service Area with nearly 7 million people, including Harris, Austin, Colorado, Fort Bend, Matagorda, Montgomery, Walker, Waller, and Wharton counties. Houston-Harris County is home to the Texas Medical Center, one of the largest medical cities in the world. On August 16th, the Houston Chronicle reported that Houston Methodist Hospital surpassed its all-time high for COVID-19 hospitalizations this week, while the Texas Medical Center reported its highest daily COVID hospitalizations average since the start of the pandemic. The medical center hit 369 average daily hospitalizations, breaking the previous high of 360 set in July 2020. Meanwhile, Methodist tallied 749 COVID patients at 7 p.m. last Sunday night, exceeding the previous record set of 731 on January 12th. Statewide, daily COVID hospitalizations have doubled since late July, from 5,846 on July 29th to 11,791 on last Sunday. Regionally, COVID hospitalizations are up for a record 31 days straight. With the recent COVID surge, the Department of Health and Human Services have now requested 5 mortuary trailers following a review of state data on fatalities. On August 17th, following a non-socially distanced political event of about 600 in Collin County, Texas, near Dallas, Governor Greg Abbott has tested positive for COVID.
In May, when Texas Governor Abbott issued his executive order banning mandatory mask mandates in government entities, including counties, cities, and school districts, there was understandably widespread outrage across the board. As the Delta variant continues to ravage the state, the outright defiance, as well as legal challenges, have mounted as local officials and school districts across the state are filing suit against Governor Abbott. One school district even circumvented the ban simply by adding masks to their dress code. Earlier this month, Houston, Dallas, and San Antonio's Bexar counties, 3 of the most populous counties of the state, had been granted temporary restraining orders against the ban by lower courts and upheld by appeals courts. But the Texas Supreme Court has now sided with Abbott ruling against the San Antonio and Dallas orders, with the cities fighting back and appealing the higher court rulings. Harris County Attorney Christian Menefee said, Abbott has repeatedly misused his authority under the Texas disaster laws. The governor's executive order acknowledges this crisis and then bans any meaningful action to address it. Dallas County Judge Clay Jenkins, after signing his order defying Abbott, reminded folks of where the battle really lies.
Others, not the schools, not the parents. In our case, you know, Governor Abbott and people in his political party have politicize this masking, public health, and vaccination when there really is no politics here. The virus doesn't care. We are in a war, all of us, not with each other, but with a virus that has claimed over 600,000 Americans, and it's coming back with a vengeance.
This week, a federal suit against Abbott and the Texas Education Agency was filed by Disability Rights Texas on behalf of 14 families, citing the ban violates students' rights under the Americans with Disabilities Act by unnecessarily putting the most vulnerable at risk. This week, 4 school districts around the state have already shut down and quarantined due to COVID outbreaks. And news like this is what makes this whole legal showdown so frightening for mothers like Gabriela from San Antonio that shared with us the impossible situation parents like her are in.
I'm very shocked and disappointed with the response to the sharp rise in COVID cases from Governor Abbott. I thought the goal was the same as always, take care of our most vulnerable. And with the Delta variant now affecting our children, we should be even more dedicated in protecting them at all costs, not staging protests against mask mandates or turning on local public officials or even fellow parents. I'm very nervous about sending my kids back to school. I have a 5-year-old boy and an 8-year-old daughter with Down syndrome who is immunocompromised. Our special needs kids got the short end of the stick as far as teaching and resources that were available for them last year with distance learning, and I am just as burned out and frustrated as every other parent. We were all eager to get the kids back to school, but now I feel as if parents are being backed up into a wall and have no choice but to take the risks, roll the dice, and sending our kids back to in-person learning when these numbers keep rising and rising. It's a nightmare.
In the latest development of this ongoing battle, President Biden has now directed Secretary of Education Miguel Cardona to take on GOP governors and take legal action against state mask mandate bans.
We are Agonse, Angela,
Con Courtney, Houston Indie Media Show,
KPFT, Houston.
Due to the recent spike of the Delta variant and the third wave of coronavirus, the state of Texas has requested for 5 mortuary trailers from the federal government, citing a possible influx of dead bodies. Reports also state mortuary trailers from the Federal Emergency Management Agency will be stationed in San Antonio and sent around the state at the request of local officials. As COVID continues to surge across the state of Texas, Pacifica Steve Zeltzer spoke with Teamsters Union Southern Regional International Vice President John Palmer. He lives in San Antonio, Texas, and is a longtime organizer.
I think, like every other business, our employers are concerned with moving the product, transporting the, particularly in our transportation segment, and just getting the goods to the customer. So, in their zeal to do this, sometimes they overlook the common precautions. So it's been difficult for some of our members who basically aren't getting notified when somebody around them turns up positive. I think after the vaccination period, we've been pretty lackadaisical. People aren't reporting illnesses. I guess the breakthrough illnesses are almost altogether unreported, or even in some cases unknown by those who contract it. So it's been very strange. I think one of the problems initially was when somebody was in contact with another positive patient, they would quarantine themselves for 10 days. They had a one-time paid period through some of our employers, and now that period's gone. What do you do? So we have people that are actually going to work to protect their income, so they have to feed their families. So it's a very, very complicated issue. And to make it even more complicated, we have a percentage of our membership that just believes they will not and won't be forced to take the vaccine. They choose not to take the vaccine.
And there's an epidemic going on now on in the South and Texas and Florida with children, teachers going back. It seems that the fight for health and safety on the job is really going to be threatened, and that, in fact, thousands and maybe even millions of people could die in this epidemic if it continues as is.
Well, I have a limited medical background. I was a medic in the Army. Did learn a few things in that stint. And I think the real problem that we're having is the herd immunity that we hope to achieve through massive vaccination isn't being achieved, and the evolution of the virus continues. So we're putting ourselves in a position where we could have been out of the woods clearly in the next month or two if everybody had been on board and rowing the same direction. Unfortunately, through the mutation process, where I believe that we're going to be in this for the long haul for quite some time now.
And that may be 5 or 10 years. And you also have the question of healthcare. We don't have national healthcare. The hospitals are overflowing in Texas and Florida and other states where you have a low vaccination rate. What does that mean for workers, Teamsters and other workers who are dependent on employers for healthcare? You have privatized healthcare in this country. It seems like it's going to be a dire situation for workers in this country without national healthcare.
I think it's a real problem. And those of us that have really good healthcare, a large number of our members do because they work for large multinational corporations and provide those benefits that are negotiated for. But to those that don't, it's difficult. I mean, the cost of healthcare in this country can absolutely put you out of home ownership. If you age out, it'll put you out of an inheritance or your children out of an inheritance. It's a very, very serious problem that I don't think politicians in our country have dealt with properly. Our for-profit healthcare system, it really doesn't work for the benefit of working men and women.
And I read a story that in Texas now, a lot of the healthcare workers have burned out. They can't get enough healthcare workers, and you have hospitals competing with each other to bring in healthcare workers in a situation of the pandemic. That seems like an intense crisis situation where competition, you don't have any kind of national healthcare system. It's creating a chaotic situation in Texas.
Oh, it absolutely has. And, you know, even with the school districts and the mandates or lack of mandates and the back and forth between school districts and the governor, we've created this really, really quagmire. It's a shame that there's not a, you know, real, real leadership. Certainly in Texas, we don't have any leadership whatsoever. The governor had a big to get together, 600 people, obviously got himself infected. I would imagine if there's a roll call of the people in that room, I would suggest that all 600 people go get a COVID test as soon as possible. I doubt that'll happen. I think the most frustrating thing about all this is the entrenchment around politics and whether you're for the mask or for the vaccine, which flies in the face of science and even some very, very educated people who choose not to follow the science. It's disheartening. And again, I think we're going to be stuck with this for a lot longer than we need to. It's going to damage our economy. It's going to damage working people's health and well-being. It's a sad, sad journey.
That was Teamsters Union Southern Region International Vice President John Palmer and Pacifica Steve Zeltzer.
Medicare for all, because healthcare is a right. Medicare for all, time the U.S. saw the light. That every woman, child, and man should have healthcare in this land. Now's the time to finally put it on the table. Big health insurance and big drug want to kill healthcare reform, my friend. They're shocking all campaign of fractured facts will never end. They want your benefits to benefit their Wall Street friends. So we pay through the nose for the CEOs and corporate dividends. Profit before people and greed before goodwill is their battle cry as they move in for the kill. We the people are collateral damage. Someone's loved one died today cause conditions pre-existed or they couldn't afford the pain. Medicare for all, because healthcare is a right. Medicare for all, time the U.S. saw the light. That every woman, child, and man should have healthcare in this land. Now's the time to finally put it on the table. Big
health insurance went to Congress to ensure its own survival. And ensure health care reform arrived there dead on arrival. They're spreading fear with blatant lies and rhetorical pollution. They obstruct the truth to protect and serve self-serving institutions. There's no other way to say it. We're being lied to and misled into another greedy corporate mess. How many thousands must lay dead before we wake up from this nightmare to the dawn of a new day? We're putting people before profit will become an American way. Medicare for all, because healthcare is a right. Medicare for all, time the U.S. saw the light that every woman, child, and man should have healthcare in this land. Now's the time.
The Medicare for All anthem by Bob Wickline. From Pacifica Radio, I'm Akua Holt. This is COVID, Race, and Democracy. Now we go to Sarasota, Florida. On Friday, August 20th, the Sarasota County School Board passed an emergency mask mandate. Becca Hadwin, a Pacifica affiliate WSLR in Sarasota, reports on the previous meeting, where school board members heard hours of intense public comment regarding face coverings.
Across Florida, school boards have created mask mandates in opposition to Governor Ron DeSantis's executive order. DeSantis says the mandates also go against the Parents' Bill of Rights, a new Florida law. The Biden administration has said they will support school districts in this position, both in Florida and throughout the nation. On Tuesday, August 17th, the debate played out on the floor of the Sarasota School Board chambers. Superintendent Brennan Asplin explained the current COVID-19 situation.
We have quite a few employees and quite a few students who are out of our schools. They are out due to quarantining and or positive cases. And we are at a point in our operations area, a critical point in our operations area. We won't be able to operate the public school system. In our transportation area, we have enough people who have not been to work that we will have to probably start double run same bus. So that means that students will get home, could get home a couple hours late. They might get to school a couple hours late. If we don't have enough bus drivers driving the buses, which we don't, we have a situation there where we're not able to transport students the way we want to transport students.
As of Friday, August 20th, there are almost 300 students and staff members who have tested positive for COVID-19. Another 375 are in quarantine for exposure. Before opening to public comment, School Board Chair Shirley Brown pleaded for civility.
We are not going to have the disorderly meetings that we've had in the past. This is a very important meeting. Our children's lives and very important personal decisions that we're all having to make right now. Please give the respect to everyone else that's in this room.
More than 60 people spoke at the school board meeting. Some brought signs. One person wore a shirt reading, "Unvaccinated Lives Matter." Robert Bettner questioned the board's role and reporting.
Your job isn't to keep our kids safe. That's our job as parents. Your job is to educate our children. You have no authority or right to quarantine anybody. I hear that you're quarantining people, kids, and I find that very disturbing all on its own. Something you didn't bring out is the rise in students that have been absent may not all have COVID. I didn't hear you say that they exactly had COVID or that it's known that that's what they had. Your numbers also didn't probably take into account all the new move-ins. We've had a massive influx of people moving in. I think the doctor alluded to that earlier.
Jimmy Cirillo doubted how face coverings could protect against COVID-19.
First of all, an N95 mask comes with a coveted NEO certification from the CDC, filters out 95% of particles that are 0.3 microns or larger. The COVID-19 virus is 0.125 microns in size. It is about one-third the size of the what the N95 mask will filtrate. So it's pretty much useless. That's first off. Cloth masks and non-N95 masks produce literally zero protection for the demographic we're talking about here today. Zero. I repeat, zero.
According to the Center for Disease Control, masks contain a person's respiratory droplets. These droplets can transmit COVID-19. Wearing a mask does more to protect others than it does to protect oneself. Overall, the mask does slow the spread of the virus. Mackenzie Valenza, a high school student, asked the board to institute a mask mandate.
Personally, I go to a school that has about a 60% to 40% ratio of mask wearing. 60% wearing, 40% not wearing. The only reasons that I think masks shouldn't have been mandatory this year was the cut of government funding. If President Biden will cover the funding, there's no reason a mandate should not be in place. As a student with people in my family that are too young to be vaccinated, I fear for their health at home. With a mask, you aren't just trying to protect yourself. You're trying to protect others' families and high-risk students who had to come back in person this year. When the virus is at its highest levels ever recorded, there should be more than just a mask mandate to protect others. I know some of my peers and I would feel a lot more comfortable with a mandate. When hospitals have almost no room due to COVID cases, why can't more people wear masks? As a concerned student, I ask you, will you step up and take action?
Megan Kahn spoke on behalf of a student who could not attend.
Dear school board leaders, I can't be here today because I'm a high school student athlete and several coaches are very vocal about their negative feelings about masks and vaccines and those who want them. I'm afraid of retaliation for speaking out. I got COVID late last year along with dozens of other kids and staff on our team who didn't practice or compete with masks. Having COVID just felt like a cold, except 9 months later, I still don't have my smell back and flavors are dull. Several of us have had fatigue, headaches, and brain fog, and I know it negatively affected my learning. On the second day of school last week, I witnessed an adult staff member make fun of a kid who was wearing a mask. I felt so bad for him. There are only a couple of kids in my class who are brave enough to wear masks. I think more of us would wear them this year, but honestly, it's not cool and it's not worth the ridicule. I think I would rather risk getting COVID again. My psych teacher taught us that a 16-year-old's brain is still developing and risk-taking is what teens are wired to do. My doctor recommends masks to reduce viral load. Last year, it really wasn't a big deal to have to wear them since we all had to, and because it could help keep others safe. It is because of this, I ask you to please reduce the risk in crowded schools and require masks again.
This has been Becca Hadwin on the discussion of whether or not to have a mask mandate in Sarasota County schools.
Trashman didn't get my trash today. Because they want more pay. Buses on strike want a raise in fare, so they can help pollute the air. But that's what makes the world go round. The ups and downs of carousel.
The War on Masks in Education by Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is being challenged by teachers and their unions. Pacifica Steve Zeltzer interviewed Broward Teachers Union President Anna Fusco about the deadly COVID pandemic and how it's affecting students, teachers, and the community.
We have been involved in is that our school board voted to continue the mask mandate with one of our protocols when students and employees are going to be returning back to school. Our teachers returned last week on the 11th. Our students returned today. And when they made that mask mandate, our governor, Governor DeSantis, decided to make an executive order the very next day to not allow districts in Florida to make a mask mandate. And on top of that, he made threats about possibly removing elected officials. And then he went to threats of holding back funding for schools, holding back funding for superintendent pay, holding back funding for school board elected leaders pay. So it's been quite a challenge on trying to get our mandates cleared and passed, which they did. But, you know, the intimidation tactic that our governor did was very trying on our board and our superintendent. But we prevailed. They continued with the mask mandate. Next is that yesterday our State Board of Education had a commission meeting to basically attack our Alachua County superintendent and our Broward County superintendent. And they decided that they were going to sanction both counties. They didn't say what sanctions they were going to do. That's the verdict, or the, you know, the sentencing will come out soon. So that's what happened yesterday at a 4 o'clock meeting that started.
This whole issue of sanctioning school districts to prevent them from having masks, pretending that this is not a virus that can kill teachers and students, what is going on?
The governor, I believe, is doing it for his own political agenda, feeding into a particular group that wants to have their own conspiracy theories of that this is not a real virus, that it's, and if it is, it's not that big of a deal. You know, getting vaccinated is getting controlled by the government, you know, possibly being chipped. The kids don't get it, which is, you know, ludicrous because our hospitals are filled. Beds are filled. Kids are in these beds. We had a child die in Alachua County. We had a child die in Duval. And right here in Broward County, we had a student that was deathly sick with COVID in the hospital fighting for her life. But she did start to make a recovery last week. She got breathing tube out of her. So she's breathing on her own now. So to say that, one doesn't matter, or most kids don't get it that severe, very little, it's just a very appalling answer.
And this has never happened before, I don't think, in the United States. Of course, we haven't had a pandemic in the United States since 1919. Over 600,000 people are dying. You have this new variant, the Delta variants and other variants. Are you concerned about the future of education and really the future of this country if we can't get this virus under control?
Well, extremely, you know, with everything in our economy, it's affected across the state, across the country, and all economic pieces. I mean, there's so many from small businesses to even big businesses that it was impacted. You know, maybe some of our big businesses didn't go out of business, but the level of money coming through, people had to get laid off. So our education resource is so important right now more than ever. It's always been the biggest strong foundation for, you know, our nation, public schools. And to have a governor that wants to put an attack on public school education is something that, like you said, you know, I've never seen anything like this. And through anyone in government, well, maybe except one person, he's no longer in government, but it's like we've got a little mini-me taking over.
The issue of also the blaming the immigrants coming into this country for the virus, it seems like immigrants are under attack, and also blaming teachers' unions. Do you think this is connected, really, that this attack is a political agenda, really, of these people?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a political agenda. And, you know, they have to blame people that they know can't fight back or have a voice. So that's that first piece. And they want to blame teachers' unions because, one, I believe because we're a group made up of mainly women. And even though we're a group of mainly women, we're a very large voice because there's so many of us. And because we're out there in the front lines with our students and with our colleagues all day, every day, for confined in classrooms and school buildings, working through this COVID. It's not like a typical, like a grocery store where the ventilation, the air conditioning, everything is tip top, and then people are, you know, walking in and out within 20 minutes. You know, everybody is in confined with each other for, you know, 7 hours a day. So that's a ginormous concern for educators. And let me just say that here in Broward County, in all the state of Florida, you know, the teachers worked face-to-face with the students through COVID. You know, we might have started school a little bit late, but we wanted to make sure that our schools were better equipped to handle taking care of the COVID, extra sanitizing, extra cleaning, getting special machines, changing in all of our air filters, making sure we got plenty of PPE in the school so, you know, if kids don't have masks or, you know, hand sanitizing, you know, special, you know, sanitizing wipes to help with the intermittent cleaning. Like, all of that needed to be done, making sure the social distancing signage was up, you know, wear your mask signage is up. Like, there was a lot of preparation. I mean, we had 256 schools to get things done to make sure it's right, so when they are walking back in, that we're able to educate them face-to-face and still have the opportunity to not have a spread of COVID throughout our school system.
That was Broward Teachers Union Anna Fusco in conversation with Pacifica Steve Zeltzer. We'll close now with a piece by Dr. Seneca Lofton, who examines two viruses in America, COVID-19 and stupidity.
You are now listening to Dr. Seneca's topical poem of the week.
Peace and greetings. Welcome to another episode of Dr. Seneca's Topical Poem of the Week. I caught Bringing the Funk with Roland Martin, which played on Black Information Network 105.3 FM in Hampton Roads, Virginia. I believe it was yesterday. But Roland Martin is absolutely correct. America not only suffers from COVID-19, but it also suffers from another virus called stupidity. Americans have politicized mask wearing and vaccinations so successfully that now America looks like a country on the brink of being crippled by its own ignorance. The school year just started, and some schools have already taken steps back to resume virtual learning. Parents are playing political football with their children. I knew the honor system was not going to work because people were not honorable then, and they certainly aren't honorable now. All of the anti-vaxxer rhetoric on Facebook and social media convinced me to pull my child out of public school, and my child will not return until the U.S. gets its act together. For God so loved the world that he gave the people doctors, scientists, and engineers, but the people choose to crucify them because of their fearful and narcissistic beliefs. I blame egotistical American adults for feeding steroids to COVID-19 instead of stopping it in its tracks. Instead of relying on science, Americans have chosen the easy paths of relying on their fears. And their fears are fueled by silly logical conclusions and strange reasons. They say things like, I take vitamins, or I would rather trust my natural immune system, or I refuse to be controlled by the government. Are these people serious? They have birth certificates and social security numbers. They clock in and clock out every day at some job. They pay taxes every year. They have Facebook pages they can't live without, and many of them are enslaved to a system of government they refuse to challenge because they benefit from it. They are already controlled. Look, people, COVID-19 has proven that it does not care about your race, culture, creed, diet, or political beliefs. It does not care if you are young or old or have underlying conditions. It is an equal opportunity virus, folks, and it does not care about your freedom of choice or your American ideology. Notice that most of the people that scream, my body, my choice, are nowhere to be found when women are fighting for the control of their bodies and reproductive systems. It's an absolute shame, and it's an absolute disgust. Well, that's my hot take, folks. Check out the poem, Writing on the Wall.
You are now listening to Dr. Seneca's Topical Poem of the Week.
The writing on the wall is like a threat to the human body, but people cannot read or learn from words they do not understand. I guess the American personality has its defective parts. Stumbling for balance, swimming naked in a sea of sharks, hoping to make it to shore before limbs give up and lungs confront fatigue. The water pierces and cuts the skin. They like the pain because their self-esteems need coddling, like a mother taking care of children. They could have beat this, but the dealer, bravado, rigged the game. Crippled the outcome, made the people feel themselves. Death does not care about race, culture, creed, or fancy diets. God smirks at smiling faces, wondering if freedom of choice produces forms of enslavement and false pride.
And that concludes today's edition of COVID, Race, and Democracy. We thank all Pacifica stations and radio affiliates who contribute to our weekly productions. This episode was produced by yours truly, Akua Holt, Steve Zeltzer, and Paulina Vasiliev, who are also the executive producers of the show. We heard music by War, The Stylistics, Sweet Honey in the Rock, and Bob Wickline. You can find this and all other episodes of COVID Race and Democracy on our website, covidtaskforce.pacifica.org. I've been your host, Akua Holt. Thanks for listening.